everyone. We wanted to tell you about a new show we are loving, the Culture Study Podcast with Anne Helen Peterson.
It's a show about exploring the nooks and crannies of the culture that surrounds you. Each week, Anne and a super smart co-host answer listeners' questions about the stuff they find interesting and perplexing, like, why do clothes suck now? Is Paw Patrol propaganda, or is it not that deep? And what's the deal with everyone I know getting a divorce?
Like Anne's tremendously popular newsletter, the Culture Study Podcast is funny, insightful, and kind of weird. And it's guaranteed to help you become the most interesting person at parties. Listen to the Culture Study Podcast every Wednesday, wherever you get your shows. There is an argument to be made for Pride and Prejudice as a prequel to Saltburn. 150 years later, some other stuff happens. Wah, wah. Text me back
at once.
Why won't you text me back?
Text me back.
Megan.
This is Text Me Back, a podcast about best friends, the best animals, and the worst people. I'm Megan Hatcher-Mace.
And I'm Lindy West. Vroom! Let's get this party started, quickly!
Oh, yeah, this is not an episode about basketball in the 1990s.
Although basketball in the 1990s had a lot of great
rivalries,
sour feelings,
drama, fisticuffs, you know,
malice at the palace.
People were getting their ears bitten off, but for some reason we're not talking about any of that. So I don't know why we're foreshadowing that we are. However, we will be talking about duels,
fighting,
and feuds. This is our versus episode, where we will be pitting beloved things against other beloved things, from the cinema to the ocean. Various feuds. By the way, we won't be resolving any of these conflicts.
No. We're going to stay and sit in a place of hate.
That's right. We're going to devolve this conflict into some of the worst hatred you've ever seen. All right, here we go with our first segment. Top three congressional duels. Lindy and I have brought for you three of our respective favorite duels, our favorite three times that Congress devolved into violence. Before I launch into my first one, obviously the most famous, I guess, duel is probably Alexander Hamilton getting murked by Aaron Burr, but there's a whole deeply cringy musical that you can watch and enjoy about that. So we are going to move past that duel to some lesser known hipster duels that you may not have heard of. I'm going to start off with my first one, the caning of Charles Sumner in 1856. You probably guessed from the year that this duel was about slavery. And our boy, Charles Sumner, he was on the right side of history. He was anti-slavery, and he was giving this speech on the Senate floor in the chamber opposing Kansas's entry to the Union as a slave state. And in this speech, he absolutely roasted the pro-slavery senators. He said one of them took on a mistress who, though ugly to others, is always lovely to him, though polluted in the sight of the world, is chaste in his sight. I mean the harlot, slavery. And of course, the pro-slavery guys who heard this are like, oh, my honor will not be so impugned. So they sent their heavy, this guy, Representative Preston Brooks of South Carolina, who was like, nah, this will not stand. So he walks onto the Senate floor after, you know, the Senate had adjourned. Brooks walks onto the Senate floor, pulls out a cane, and absolutely beats the ever-loving shit out of Charles Sumner with his cane that, by the way, Senate.gov has described as a, quote, white cane of the type used to discipline dogs. We don't stand Brooks. We do stand Sumner. It's really too bad. You hate to see an abolitionist go down like that, but I guess in happier news, Preston Brooks resigned from Congress, immediately got reelected because of that, because he had caned Charles Sumner, because all of the pro-slavery constituents were like, that ruled. We loved that. And then he died at the very old age of 37 years old. So,
and then he became a ghost and he haunted the Senate building.
I don't understand what that has to do with ghosts.
It doesn't have anything to do with ghosts. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Aren't we doing top three ghouls?
Dude, top three duels. Top like congressional three duels.
Congressional ghouls?
Duels.
Ghouls.
Duels.
2 hours later.
What? What are you talking about? I thought we were each bringing in our top three ghouls. You know, like,
Lindy, why would it be ghouls?
No, you're right. It is, I brought in my duels. It's duels. I was just kidding.
Oh my God.
I brought in top three duels.
I don't, okay. All right.
My first duel is the Grunch.
Oh my God.
Of Louisiana versus the people that wander into his swamp and think that they see an injured goat asking for help.
Oh my God.
The Grunch is a inbred swamp monster that's lived in the bayou for too long.
Yeah.
And so if you find yourself on Grunch Road, says Business Insider, do not get out of the car, because that's when the duel begins with the Grunch,
yeah,
who is merely tricking them so that it can drink their blood. Much like in Congress, when they when the senators debate an issue.
That's certainly a duel.
Thank you. What's your next duel?
My next duel is more recent than the caning of Charles Sumner. Although one thing about the Sumner one is, I guess, you know, historians point back to that moment and say like, oh, that was, you know, kind of a harbinger that the nation was coming towards this big collapse, which was the Civil War. And now it's kind of like all happening again. And I think we're also desensitized to how bad Congress is that we're like, I don't know. So actually, I have two more duels and they both happened on the same day, which was November 14th, 2023. And the first was McCarthy versus Burchett, which is when Representative Tim Burchett of Tennessee was giving an interview to NPR. All of a sudden, he says,
why'd you elbow me in the back, Kevin?
So Tim Burchett goes running after McCarthy and is like, hey, man.
Hey, Kevin, you got any guts?
Jerk.
And McCarthy goes, what? Who are you? I don't know who, like, what are you talking about?
I don't know her.
He said, I don't know her. And he was like, what are you talking about? And Burchett later gave this interview that was like, he punched me. He gave me a clean shot to the kidney. Those are his words. Those are Tim Burchett's words, not mine, that McCarthy punched him straight in the kidney and then tried to act like he, one, didn't know who Tim Burchett was, and two, that had never happened. The next day, McCarthy gives an interview to the press being like, I don't know what he's talking about. And then this man has the audacity to say, if I'd punched him in the kidney, hang on.
Why would I punch somebody? Would I kidney punch somebody?
But like that,
if I kidney punch him, he'd be on the ground. So,
hilariously big words from America's most bonkers turkey man who ever lived. There's no chance Kevin McCarthy knows how to fight. He has a security detail which protected him from consequences for the kidney punch. It was all very ridiculous. Then, a month later, Kevin McCarthy retired in disgrace and was like, I'm leaving Congress completely. And he hasn't been heard from since. Mm. Rest easy, Kevin. By the way, don't feel bad for Tim Burchett. As I mentioned, he's a representative from Tennessee, and after a deadly school shooting in Nashville, he gave an interview to the press saying, we are never going to fix gun violence. So,
cool.
If somebody does want to punch him in the kidney, that might be a motive.
I love that kind of pledge from from a leader.
Yeah, from a person with the power to do it. Lindy, your next duel?
My next duel is Mr. Chew, C-H-E-W, versus people that made fun of him in Delaware. Mr. Chew, see, it is a political mm-hmm. duel. Mr. Chew was the Chief Justice of the Delaware Supreme Court in the 1700s.
Oh.
But you know what, Megan? He didn't get no respect.
Oh, my
and
God.
And he was just trying to be a good judge, but people would make fun of him when he walked by pretending to sneeze.
because his name was Mr. Chu, and they would say Achu, and he was humiliated.
I guess there was nothing going on that would have distracted him from such a humiliation. So
yeah, that was his probably top priority in life. So he was absolutely humiliated. He never recovered emotionally, and eventually he died.
Oh.
And in life, he did not get revenge, but in death, oh boy, did Mr. Chu take his sweet revenge by sitting outside the courthouse under a poplar tree and tugging on men's coattails and, according to Business Insider, giving women a cold, icy feeling.
Which I'm going to guess he also did while he was alive. And that's his ghost power now that he's dead.
Yes.
So, I'm sorry, is Business Insider our nation's leading ghoul news source? Is that?
Duel.
What's going on here?
Duels.
Right. I'm so sorry. Yes.
Duels.
Bacon. I'm sorry, the best that Mr. Chu could come up with was tugging at gentlemen's coattails. What does he do now that men don't wear coattails?
We don't know. He's probably even more frustrated.
Yeah. All right. This is a doozy. My final duel happened the same day as the kidney punch. And it was between Mark Wayne Mullen, United States Senator from Oklahoma, and Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters. Mark Wayne Mullen has longstanding beef with the Teamsters because he believes that the Teamsters, and how dare they, tried to unionize Mark Wayne Mullen's plumbing business that he owned before he went to Congress. And that should be illegal. Can't we all agree? Also, I should say, perhaps it goes without saying, Mark Wayne Mullen is a Republican. So Mark Wayne Mullen and Sean O'Brien had been kind of beefing on Twitter before there was this hearing in the Senate about how union membership benefits working families. So Sean O'Brien was invited to testify at this hearing. Mark Wayne Mullen is on the committee that was holding the hearing, and the committee that was holding the hearing is chaired by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. So those are all the characters. The cast is in place. So Mark Wayne Mullen starts going after Sean O'Brien, head of the Teamsters. He starts off, Mark Wayne Mullen starts off by reading mean tweets where Sean O'Brien called him a moron and full of shit. So one of the greatest cell phones of all time, Mark Wayne Mullen is reading mean tweets about himself into the congressional record.
Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been, always will be. Quit the tough guy act in these Senate hearings.
You know where to find me anytime, any place, cowboy, basically saying, I'll fight you, whatever. And so Mark Wayne Mullen goes, this is the place. This hearing room is the place.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Like, let's go. And then he says, and Mark Wayne Mullen says,
well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
And the use of butt in that, that's how you know Mark Wayne meant business. He busted out a cuss.
Get those two beautiful cheeks up out of that chair and spin around for me, baby.
You stand that steam ham up because we're about to fight. So anyway, so Mark Wayne Mullen's about to like take off his rings. And Sean O'Brien's like, okay, let's go. So Sean O'Brien gets up and poor Bernie Sanders is like,
oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Waving the gavel, just going, you're a United States Senator.
You know, you're a United States Senator. Okay. Sit down, please.
He basically is like, America already hates Congress. You guys are not helping at all. It was so bananas. And then just the fact that it happened on the same day as the kidney punch, it was like, what on earth is going on? So on the one hand, while I abhor violence, I would love to see just a bare knuckle brawl between Mark Wayne Mullen and Sean O'Brien. And I think it goes without saying who I think would win in such a battle. The answer is obviously Sean O'Brien. Like Teamsters is kind of the whole sentence, but it's just, they carry a power among them that a boss would never understand. Mark Wayne Mullen doesn't stand a chance against Sean O'Brien. Not that I'm condoning violence, but that was an excellent duel day. Lindy, your final ghoul duel. Gaduel.
Duel. My final duel is Lindy West versus Bloody Mary.
Let's go.
I don't believe in pretty much anything supernatural. However, I don't believe in ghosts, but I am afraid of ghosts, and no ghost is more Brady to me than Bloody Mary, the dead lady that lives in the mirror. And if you are in the bathroom in the dark and you look in the mirror and then you even think
you're done
about Bloody Mary,
yeah,
you're done. She comes out of the mirror and she, I don't know, gives you a widow kiss, but it's the kiss of death.
But like, ghosts can't kill people. Name one person that's been killed by a ghost. Like, cosmically, how is that even fair?
I don't know anyone that's been killed by a ghost. You know? That's a great point. Maybe it's like, if a ghost kills you, you become the ghost and they take over your body and that's how they come back to life. Maybe I am Bloody Mary.
Oh my God. Best friends, Megan Hatcher-Mays and comedian Bloody Mary.
It's like, basically you go into the bathroom, you turn out the light, mm-hmm. you look in the mirror, and then I think you have to say your name three times, which I always do in my head. Once I start to think, don't say Bloody Mary's name three times, my brain does it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I am in my 40s. I'm still afraid of Bloody Mary. I avoid looking in the mirror at night because... First of all, what's a mirror and how does it work? How is she in it? She's in every mirror?
What if the logistics make no sense?
They make no sense, but I'm going to just like, you know, better safe than sorry it. Like, I don't need to be tempting Bloody Mary.
Does it work if you just think it or do you have to say her name out loud?
This is what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't know the rules. No one's told me the rules, you know, the official rules. Like the tradition states that you have to say it out loud and that you kind of have to like want it. I feel like, you know,
you have to be bought in a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like it's not like Beetlejuice where you can get tricked. I feel like you have to like be sort of reaching out to her, you know, spiritually with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I am because I'm fixated and like, I feel like I'm in danger of,
summoning.
I might sign up for her MLM.
Bloody Mary's specially patterned petticoats.
Yeah, they're buttery soft. When did everything start having to be buttery soft?
I don't know.
That's my number one top scariest congressional duel. Because... she's for certain also haunting the mirrors in the bathrooms of Congress.
Absolutely. Coming up after the break, we settle one of the nation's oldest debates that has been tearing families asunder since the 19th century. Which is better, the BBC Pride and Prejudice miniseries or the 2005 feature film Pride and Prejudice? Stay tuned. Our show is called Text Me Back, so we want to invite you to our group chat.
Do you have any questions for us about your own friendship dilemmas? Maybe friendships with ghosts?
Ooh.
Or just some personal tidings of your own? No song needed, but encouraged.
Very encouraged. We want to include your questions and tidings on the show, so text us to join the Text Me Back text club. Text BFF to 206-926-9955. That's 206-926-9955.
And even if we can't text you back every time, we pinky promise to read all of your texts and think about how to include them in the show.
This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks!
Megan, it's time to go back, all the way back, to something that we teased in episode one? Or two of this show?
Yeah, it was many years ago.
Many years ago. We talked about someday analyzing pros and cons of each famous Pride and Prejudice adaptation. The 1995 BBC miniseries starring Colin Firth and the 2005 feature film starring Keira Knightley. And today we're going to do it because it's Versus Day.
It's Versus Day!
And I have to say that in full transparency, was a little bit against doing this segment because all Pride and Prejudices are my baby.
Yeah.
And while the BBC miniseries is my number one baby that I love the most, more than my other babies, the film is great stuff, especially if you want just like a hot, quick injection of P&P.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that we could go through a great way to compare and contrast is if we went through character by character and we talked about who we thought did it better.
I think that's great. I think there's a generational divide between like which one people like more. I think younger people tend to like the 2005 one more, and millennials, older people, tend to like the miniseries more, because it usually just comes down to whichever one you saw first. But I do believe that the shadowy cabal that is working overtime to drive a wedge between us has chosen the various Pride and Prejudices.
That's genius.
As a wedge issue. So something to think about as you are getting into online dust-ups about which one is better. It'll be okay.
That's why today in the Versus episode, we aren't going to declare a winner. No. We're going to celebrate both.
That's correct.
Because we're going to heal this country.
Lindy, why don't you kick us off? Because people might not know you have a BA in wan and distressed patrician British people.
I sure do. I'm a doctor of Pride and Prejudice. I have read the novel and I have watched the BBC miniseries, I would say 10,000 times a year.
I remember you had it on VHS back when I think like the only way you could get it is if you donated enough money to PBS or something.
I sure did. Sure did.
So your love is like legit. Very legit.
I believe it was 6 tapes. Oh, I popped them in and out all day long. Okay, so like this is hard for me because, you know, I wanted to be territorial and dislike the Keira Knightley film, but it's just doing a different thing, you know? Yeah,
totally.
Like it's doing more of like an erotic sort of microchemistry sexy vibe, whereas the BBC one is a lot more expansive. Obviously, it's 3 times longer.
Yeah.
It's sort of a little more prim and proper.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's 3 times longer. That means 3 times more knowing glances, 3 times more like psychological chess with, you know, members of the opposite sex. Whereas the 2005 version is a little bit more bing, bang, bong,
Pride and Prejudice. Something that you pointed out to me is that there's a clear winner in terms of who has the most tiny bolero jackets.
Yes. That is the 1995 miniseries from BBC. So many tiny little jackets cut right off underneath the heaving bosom of the Bennett sisters. The 2005 movie, 0 bolero jackets. Something to think about.
If you're a historic costumery expert, could you text us and let us know whether the tiny bolero jackets were period or not, because I want to know. So let's just start this out by going character by character. We got to start with the girl of the hour herself, the goat, Lizzie Bennett, Miss Elizabeth Bennett. So we got Keira Knightley in the film. We got Jennifer.
Is it Eel? I guess canonically for this podcast, it will be Ely.
Or let's never say it again.
Jennifer versus Keira.
Yep.
For Lizzie Bennett supremacy.
I gotta go, Jennifer.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because I actually think that Keira Knightley brings like a lot of like pensive wanting to the role. And she's beautiful.
And she reads younger. She reads younger, you know, like, because I think the character's supposed to be like 17
yeah.
or something. So it's
maybe
like
maybe 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, old Jennifer is just doing this thing. It's like she's constantly doing like sexy chess in her mind with Mr. Darcy. She really brings like but also she's given more space and time to do that. So that's one difference. She's definitely on the heaving bosom scale, heaving bigger, more. Yep. Stronger. Mm-hmm. She definitely wins the Heaving Bosom Award for the various Bennett sisters. Her hair is worse, for sure. No offense.
For sure. Although, I gotta say, the bangs on Keira are not great. They look like my bangs when I refuse to take a shower.
It's a very greasy bang situation going on in 2005. I am gonna give the edge to Jennifer just because while I think Keira Knightley is fantastic and I have absolutely no beef with her at all, I feel like Jennifer just brings a certain like intensity to it that really makes a character come alive.
Yeah, it's subtler, you know, like I feel like the Keira
Lizzie is a little stressful. She's very mm-hmm. intense. She's kind of mean. She's very mean to Charlotte Lucas. Mm-hmm. And that's totally fine. It's just a different way to play the character. And, you know, Jennifer just has my heart, I think, because that was my first Pride and Prejudice. And like, also, do you think it's like a sort of backhanded, evil, sneaky little shade to Kira that they don't once talk about her fine eyes?
Yeah, there's like none of that part where they even hint that Mr. Darcy likes her at all.
Not with those peepers.
Not with those mud puddles. I don't think so.
So our number one Elizabeth Bennet is
Jennifer.
Okay, now on to Jane. Jane Bennet. Now,
oh, this is a toughie as well.
This is not a toughie for me.
Oh, and
I was surprised by my answer because I thought I was going to be BBC all the way down, mm-hmm. but I got to go with the film. Rosamund Pike.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you. She's beautiful. Notably, her hair is normal.
The hair of the BBC Jane Bennet is
so bad.
It's among the worst ever committed to film.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, she has sort of a middle part, comes down very severely, and then she has two hot dog ringlets, one on each side of the face. It's not good.
It's something, is what it is. It's probably very accurate, and I hate it. I feel like the BBC Jane is a little bit too much of an apologist, whereas I think Rosamund Pike at least brings a little bit of skepticism to her Jane. Like, I feel like the BBC Jane is like, oh, well, I'm sure he meant well. No, he didn't. Mm-mm. And she just thinks everyone is great. And sure, and that's the character. That's the character as Jane Austen wrote her. But also, I think that Rosamund brings a little bit more like, to it, which I like.
Okay, also, I gotta say, both of these actresses are extremely beautiful.
Yes.
Every person that you see on TV is beautiful. One time I saw Matthew Perry on the street in LA in the year 2002. And I was like, that's the hottest man I've ever seen in my life. So even people that you think that they're just a regular looking person, no, they're hot as hell. So no shade to either, but Rosamund brings some believability to the thing where everyone in Pride and Prejudice is constantly like, Jane Bennet is the hottest bitch in all of Hertfordshire.
Unfortunately, you gotta speak on it because they're like, Jane is a stunning babe from heaven. And then you see Jane and you're like, that's just some lady who is really pretty.
Yeah.
But come on, relax, calm down. You know, also that happens in a version of that happens in the 2005 one where Mrs. Bennet is like, oh, Lizzie's so plain. She won't admit it. She's so plain. I'm like, ma'am, that's Keira Knightley. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Unanimously, it goes to Rosamund.
Mr. Bingley.
You know what? Let me start this off by saying impossible. Impossible. Yeah. For me, it's a draw. And actually, what I loved about this rewatch for me is that I discovered that I freaking love Mr. Bingley. He's my favorite of everybody. He's my favorite character. Yeah. He's like the founding father of Golden Retriever energy. I'm obsessed with him.
I mean, he's a good boy.
He's a very good boy. Yes, he is very suggestible. Like, it's really easy to just be like, oh, she doesn't even like you. And he's like, oh, I guess I'll go back to London in shame.
Alone.
So I ended up falling in love with both Mr. Bingleys. I do want to say that I think Crispin Bonham Carter, Helena Bonham Carter's cousin, who plays Mr. Bingley in the 1995 miniseries, his face is just so funny. So maybe like a slight edge to him because his face is always just like, you know, he's just totally cute and like innocent in it. But both of them bring that like really innocent and very funny puppy energy to that role. So for me, it's a draw.
I feel like that Mr. Bingley really plays up the awkwardness in a way that is a different, slightly different take that I liked. Like he is so nervous but also he kind of reads like a little boy. That guy runs a household.
If you say so, he's only 12,
but he is so cute. Okay. I like that as a draw. Okay. Here's a big one. Mr. Darcy. For me, there's only one.
I mean, listen, I think this is really where the online fight between the two versions really roots itself. Who's the superior Mr. Darcy? Before I give my answer, which should be obvious because we have the same haircut,
I just want to say that I hadn't remembered Matthew McFadyen's version of Mr. Darcy being as good as it was, because I think I was like a real miniseries loyalist the first time I watched this movie. But he's so good, and he's really handsome in it. He's very smoldering. He stalks about angrily, just like you like. He's a little bit scary, which I kind of like, you know, especially at first. He's very severe and kind of scary. But he does have like a soft handsomeness to him that really caught me by surprise. So I was like, oh, I totally, totally get why people who watch this version first, or people who are younger who this version resonates more for them. I totally get it, because he's a special guy.
I get it too. It's really good. Although I do want to say, unfortunately, I'm so sorry to do this to the people of the podcast, but as I was doing my rewatch, my dear husband, Ahame Fale, walked through the room, and he looked at Matthew McFadyen, and he said, that guy looks like Peyton Manning. Sorry. But what if Peyton Manning touched your hand and then he flexed his hand? Would you change your mind?
No.
Okay.
No.
But yeah, I mean, Firth is my...
It's Firth.
Firth is my Darcy.
Yeah.
The thing that you get in 6 hours versus 2 hours is like the extent of this man's social anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like, he really sells it. I really believe it. And then when he turns into a soft boy at the end, it's like really earned.
Yeah. You know what I love? So the iconic scene in the 2005 movie is the hand flex.
Ugh, yep.
Love it. But the iconic scene, obviously, in the miniseries is Firth's Darcy jumping into the Giardia water. He dives headfirst into a pond after like a long, sweaty ride on his steed. He jumps into the pond and then he bumps into Elizabeth, and she's just so like, oh my God, his shirt is wet. And I ran into him at Pemberley. Oh my God. And it's like, it's game over for her.
Like, she's never seen a man's nipple.
Not a one time in her whole life. She's probably like never even seen her own nipple. Like, when were mirrors invented? You know?
A lot safer back then. No Bloody Mary.
And then, of course, in 2005, I'm like watching, thinking like, oh, are they going to try to recreate the pond thing? And they don't. And at first I was like, but then you and I texted about it. I'm glad they didn't. That's its own thing.
Yeah.
And Matthew McFadyen gets the hand flex, and he gets a sexy walk across a misty field, which is very, very hot. Very hot.
And they make him wet. They do make him wet.
They do make him wet.
When he comes to tell Lizzie that he loves her in the strange forest pagoda.
He's like, release me from my agony and be my wife, which is, I can't think of a more sexy way to be proposed to.
Yeah. I hate your guts, but I am horny for you. So let's get married.
Trying to get involved. What's up? What's good? Who else we got?
Okay, Mr. Collins. Okay, I have such... the BBC Mr. Collins... Is that an actual type of man that exists? Unfair, but he is unparalleled, that no one will ever take him down. But I want to say about the film Mr. Collins that I didn't remember. Like, the film Mr. Collins is the only time I've ever like felt some kind of sympathy for Mr. Collins, because you really feel like the film Mr. Collins is neurodivergent and he's doing his best. You know what I mean? He's not like a greasy frog.
the miniseries Mr. Collins, it's giving Peter Pettigrew, it's giving Worm Tongue from Lord of the Rings.
It's Grima coded.
He's creepy, peepy, weirdo. Has some sort of weird, lusty obsession with Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Whereas the movie guy is just sort of like, this is the best I could do. I'm going to try to milk it, which in a way that you can kind of understand a little bit better. Even though his proposal was a lot creepier and weirder in the movie, I think, than it was in the miniseries to Lizzie.
I don't understand why he doesn't want to marry Mary Bennett. Why
not? Speaking of top ghouls, the book and both movies, is everyone's just like, oh, the lovely Bennett girls and Mary. Oh, good. It's like that old deja vu slogan that was like hundreds of beautiful girls and three ugly ones. It's like four beautiful Bennett sisters and Mary.
Hundreds of beautiful girls and three ugly ones and Mary, who's even worse. I know. You do get the feeling that if someone suggested that they release Mary into the woods and then hunt and kill her, people would be like, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
And Mary's just trying to read the Bible and learn the pianoforte.
I know.
She's such a drag, though.
In real life, the actress who who played Mary used to be married to Elon Musk. So that's one major knock against the film. While we don't blame women for the misdeeds of men, I will also say that the same actress, Tallulah Riley, texted Elon Musk and said he should buy Twitter and destroy wokeism. So is that blaming her for the misdeeds of men, or is that blaming her for personally being a freak? It's the latter. So I'm just saying.
She will never play the pianoforte in my presence.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
Not.
And let's wrap this up. Obviously, the miniseries Mr. Bennett is better than Donald Sutherland, who I love, but he's kind of creepy. I think the most important character in the entire world of Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Darcy's friend, Colonel Fitzwilliam. In the BBC one, he's hot as hell. And in the film, he's regular. So
he's regular. And we're against that on this podcast.
Yep. Also, why is his name Colonel Fitzwilliam and Darcy's name is Fitzwilliam Darcy? I don't like it. Oh, and Lady Catherine. I've got to go BBC again, even though Judi Dench is so scary.
Lady Catherine de Bourgh, I agree with you. But Judi Dench, oh boy, she's spooky in that movie. Whereas I feel like all the actors in the miniseries are just very floppy and dramatic, which I love. I do love it. But Judi Dench ate down. She was like, I'm here to destroy everybody on set. And it's like, I'm sorry.
The BBC one is like a cartoon. She's a Muppet. And then Judi Dench, I really believe that she's going to ruin my life. And
I think Judi Dench thought it was a documentary. she thought that was really happening. So again, we will not be choosing a winner. They're both excellent. Although I will say this podcast has come out in favor of cozy watching, which means putting something on for 6 to 12 hours and not moving at all. And the BBC miniseries gives you that opportunity. The movie, not so much unless you watch it 3 times, which I am for. I support it. But they're both excellent. Both excellent Mr. Darcy's, both excellent Lizzie's, both phenomenal Bingley's, in my opinion.
20 out of 10. Break! Coming up, there can be only one top beast of the sea. Who's on top? Orcas or humpbacks? We'll decide. Now we come to one of the greatest, most legendary verses of all time. A top feud, a controversial feud, a feud of the sea.
Yo ho!
That only Poseidon can judge, but we're going to try.
We're going to try.
Megan and I were both born and raised in Seattle, Washington. And when you are born and raised in Seattle, Washington, I feel like you're indoctrinated to love and honor the orca whale.
Yeah.
There's a school called Orca School.
Yeah.
There's like, I don't know, there's an island called Orca S Island. There's like an orca that's like the mascot of the bus.
It's called an orca cart.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
You're kind of raised to have, one, a healthy respect for the sea and everything in it, and the orca most of all. We had to raise salmon from roe.
Yeah.
In a big fish tank in the hallway? Like, who does that? Then we have to take the teenagers that have a name. There's a name for them.
Fry.
The fry. Yes. Yes, you remember. And take the fry. You have to, like, raise them up to, like, a certain juvenile age. And then you, I guess, set them free. And then, like, a couple months later, they make you go to the locks and see if you can see them going up the salmon ladder.
Right.
Not that you would ever know that that was one of your salmon sons that you raised in the fifth grade hallway.
Yeah, but he can recognize you.
He recognized me. And he said, that's my mother. But just to give people a little bit of a flavor of what it's like to grow up in the Pacific Northwest, it's like the ocean.
We did do the raising the salmon eggs at my elementary school, except not everyone got to do it. Only one class got to do it. And that was Mr. Daniels' fifth split. He let the students call him Kent instead of Mr. Daniels. He handpicked the students for his class. So only special kids got to be in it.
How is that allowed?
And they didn't have desks. They sat on couches and beanbags. And they did all kinds of hippie shit, like raising the salmon. And nobody else got to do it. And I'm still mad.
Whatever you say, Rudolf Steiner. What a dork.
I know. But they had the salmon egg tank in the lobby of the school. So like I would go look at the salmon eggs, but yeah. I was not allowed to touch them, and I was not allowed to release them, and I was not allowed to raise them as my son. So I'm still a little bit mad, but that is the environment in which we grew up.
If it makes you feel better, probably all those salmon got eaten by orcas.
Yeah, it does make me feel better. Okay, so we're raised to have loyalty to the orca. But in recent years, some information has come my way, which is that orcas are dickheads.
Yeah.
And they're mean.
Unfortunately, cancel culture has come for the mighty orca.
They slap seals with their tails and launch them out of the water.
Yeah.
Like a hacky sack.
Yep.
And then they also play with their corpses. And they, it's not nice. And, but the worst thing that they do is that they will come across a baby gray whale and its mommy, and then they will chase them for hundreds of miles until the baby is so tired that it cannot swim and the mommy is too tired to hold it up out of the water so it can breathe, and then they will eat it. And I don't think that's right.
I don't think so either. And yet we are asked to glorify the orca as opposed to like the gentle humpback who just wants to slowly swim and sing his sad song. And thus we arrive at the verses. Orcas versus humpbacks. Lindy, what do you have to say about the mighty humpback?
Well, Megan, I know something about you. We've talked about it before, which is that you love street justice.
I love street justice.
And the humpbacks engage in street justice against the orcas. They patrol the oceans. And when they find orcas effing with a sweet baby, they intervene because they are bigger than the orcas, and the orcas can't hurt them. And so they will like protect seals and baby whales from the orcas, and they will shut it down, and they'll be like, oh no, no, you go back to eating salmon.
Oceanic vigilantes.
Yes. And I look, to be very clear, I want all whales to thrive and multiply.
Yes. Like,
I'm not saying that I want the orcas to go away and get effed.
You're not.
I'm not. And like, obviously we love the sinking of the yachts.
I was going to say, if I can advocate for the devil for just one second, in this case, the devil is the mighty orca. I will say this. They also have a taste for street justice. Now they are, as you've laid out, sociopaths. They bandy about seal corpses. By the way, they'll separate like a gray whale from its mom, take like one bite and then leave it. It's like, you did all that. You did all of that cunning, you know, strategy hunting for a single nibble. To me, that suggests a layer of sociopathy that you don't see in other sea creatures. Honestly, they're too smart for their own good. They don't have anything to do. And so they're just like engaging in war now. It's very weird.
It's like when you leave your border collie home alone and then he eats your couch.
Exactly.
That's your fault.
Just gnaws through your wall. That's an orca, basically. So here's the thing. They also engage in street justice. They have been known to sink luxury yachts. They have been known to attack the wealthy. I think they might be unionizing down there. And I don't know. They also want to fight Mark Wayne Mullen in a cage match. And I think we should let them. But the flip of that is, the flipper of that is... The orcas are not always punching up. Sometimes they punch down, and that's what makes them villainous. Whereas the humpback, the gentle humpback, is just, I don't know, token up and cruising through Mexico and, you know, enjoying life.
They're eating krill.
Yeah.
You know? And the krill don't know what's going on.
They don't. What's the worst thing a humpback ever did? Ate Pinocchio?
He came out the other side even better, I would say. He learned a lot.
Became a human man. I mean, this isn't much of a versus. It's like, it's obviously humpbacks. It's just that orcas do have some good. If they would just direct their energy for good instead of evil, maybe we could forgive.
Okay, orcas versus yachts. Orcas.
Yes.
Humpbacks versus an orca bullying a baby seal. Humpback. Also, I will add that I went whale watching for the first time this past summer, and boy, did the humpbacks put on a show. They are jumping out of the water. They're spinning around. Mm-hmm. And then the orcas are all business.
Yeah.
And we saw two orcas and they were brother and sister and they were like, we're busy.
Yeah.
We're hunting. Leave us alone. All they did was sort of like, you know, they just sort of scooted by. Whereas the humpbacks were doing a whole ballet. They were so cute. Mm-hmm. They were puffing steam in the air out of their blowholes. They were twirling and rolling. They were leaping. And again, all of that said, if an orca looked me in my eye, I would weep. I don't think that they should be put in prison. But I think maybe what they need is just what the humpbacks are providing, which is a little scared straight, you know?
Yeah. So to be clear, no one on this podcast is agitating for the reopening of SeaWorld to act as a prison for maladjusted orcas. No one's saying that. Least of all me. I mean,
much like real prison, they come out
worse.
Worse.
I know. They come out with having gotten no rehabilitation. I just think, one, I think orcas need some nonviolent enrichment opportunities, which means put more yachts in the ocean, because I think that's great. It doesn't hurt anybody. Everybody loves it. And two, stay away from me. You know how they're always like, they, them, those ones, the shadowy pro-orca cabal.
Yep.
They're always saying, oh, they've never killed a person in the wild. And I was like, yet.
Yeah.
Like, why don't tempt fate. I would never, you know, it's like every now and then a video will show up on the algorithm of like a person who's like, oh, I was in my kayak in British Columbia and a bunch of baby orca and their mom went under my kayak. I was like, boy, you better go to church. You're lucky to be alive. They're crazy. And if they're bored, they're going to start whacking you through the sky with their tails.
Heaven help you. If that was Lindy West is the star of that video, act two would be RIP. Because my kayak's sinking because it is filled up with my poop.
With
from
my
fear.
Fearful
and we're going down.
Dookies.
One last thing, actually, I want to say, maybe also to humanize the orca a little bit. Not humanize. Well, okay. Is that I just saw a thing on TikTok where someone was like, maybe we should not call them killer whale, but reframe it as eater whale because they're just trying to eat. I was like, I do relate to that. I'm just trying to eat.
Okay, but what is a precondition for them to eat?
Well,
they have to kill it. Yeah, they have to kill it.
Yeah.
Maybe what the orcas need in order to modify their behavior is to be haunted by a terrifying ghoul, like a humpback ghast in the Pacific Ocean.
The grunchback. We solved it.
All right. In a unanimous decision, the win goes to orcas. No, humpbacks. Kings of the sea and queens.
All right, let's go.
Well, as promised, we have solved no conflicts and the feuds continue.
Yep.
That's the text me back guarantee.
You know who we needed to help us solve these feuds?
Who?
Mr. Chu. Mr. Chu, Chief Justice of the Delaware Supreme Court.
I know. I want to feel icier and more creeped out.
Like, we can't settle any of these feuds because we're not judges.
I know.
We need Mr. Chu. We need Poseidon,
mm-hmm.
Lord of the Sea. And we need Colonel Fitzwilliam.
We need King Charles. Is he the one who decides definitively which is the better Pride and Prejudice?
Yes. We need the Napoleon Bonaparte. We got nowhere, but we did have some great times, Megan. We had a lot of discussions. We had a lot of laughs.
We laughed. We sang.
We ghouled.
We duelled. It was great.
So what are we going to do next week?
Great question. We reached out to our text club to ask for their run-ins with the killer, the nameless, faceless, spooky specter who haunts us all.
Especially Wendy Williams.
And very specifically, talk show host Wendy Williams. And man, did the text club deliver some doozies. So we will be talking about the killer, and perhaps we will defeat the killer. I doubt it. But we're going to try.
You guys scared the pants off me with your stories of the killer.
I'm so scared.
And we're also going to indulge in a new segment we're calling 2 Minutes Hate. where we hate something for 2 minutes.
That's right.
Because we try to keep this show light and positive.
Yeah.
But sometimes we want to be mean and nasty. So we're going to condense it into a sweet pill.
We were not content to have a show about feuds. We want to create some new ones.
Yeah.
So
and
tune in next week.
We're also going to do a third thing that's a surprise. Thank you so much for listening to Text Me Back. If you like the show, please tell your best friend about us and rate and review us because it helps people find the show. Text Me Back is a production of KUOW in Seattle, a proud member of the NPR network. Our editor is Jeannie Yandel. Our senior producer is Brandy Fullwood. Our mixer is Jason Burrows.
Diana Bowen makes our video clips. They are delightful, and I'm not just saying that because we're in them. Go enjoy them on Instagram and TikTok at Text Me Back Pod. Our production team includes Michaela Giannotti Boyle, Amelia Peacock, Alicia Villa, Hans Twite, Brendan Sweeney, and Marshall Eisen.
Our music is by Chief Ahamefale J. Oluo.
Special thanks to our perfect angel, Isolde Raftery.
I'm Lindy West.
And I'm Megan Hatcher-Mays. See you next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.